Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai. You know, the observant among you may notice something here. Jimmy, he's not present. Something exciting happened last weekend, or I guess 2 weekends ago when you're watching this. Jimmy got married. So obviously he can't be in the studio today. He's a little bit preoccupied. He's a little bit busy. But we have something special planned, something new we're trying out. Before we get into it, I want to shout out our sponsors, cardkingdom.com/command zone. That's our affiliate link. That's what you want to use when you're going to buy your magic product, your magic singles. You know, Time Spiral is coming out right around the time you're watching this. Tons of new cards. You know, those old retro frames on all those cards look really, really sweet. You know, you want to get your hands on that. You're going to buy magic cards anyway. Just use cardkingdom.com/command zone. When you do, you really are helping out all of our content. And also, when you get those cards, you want to keep them safe. You want to keep them in great condition. You want to use Ultra Pro products. You know, Ultra Pro is the company that Jimmy and I trust our own collections to. We want to make sure that our cards stay in mint condition. You want to put them in a Pro Gloss Eclipse sleeve. You want to play them on an Ultra Pro playmat. You're going to put your decks into a nice, safe satin tower or maybe a deck box from the Mythic collection. All that stuff not only protects your cards, but also looks really smart and snappy, really classy when it's sitting there on the table. It makes all the other players go, ooh, that looks sweet. And then finally, the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. You get all kinds of perks, like watching Game Nights, which is coming out very soon, a day earlier than the general public. You also get to watch Extra Turns early, get to talk with Jimmy and I on our Discord. We're on there each and every single day, just chatting with patrons, answering questions and such. Patreon.com/command zone is the place to go if you want to be a part of that community. Okay. Let's talk about what this episode is going to be today. So people ask Jimmy and I all the time about our origin stories. You know, where we came from, what did we do before we started making magic content? Basically, what our journey has been up until now. And we actually did an episode a few years ago talking about a lot of this stuff. However, most of you have never seen that episode. It's one we recorded in an art studio that belongs to a friend of mine named Rob Pryor. Now, Rob is a world-renowned artist. He's painted on stage with people like Flo Rida and Linkin Park. He's worked with Stan Lee. He's done a ton of TV shows and movie stuff. He even had a piece in the Louvre the year that we recorded this episode. He also is just a mega talented guy in general. He paints with both hands. He's ambidextrous. Sometimes he paints on two paintings at the same time, one paintbrush in each hand. I know it sounds crazy. If you're watching YouTube, you'll see some video of it. He actually does this. So the interesting thing is that we actually have Rob, since we're in his art studio, painting in the background while we're doing this episode. So while Jimmy and I are discussing our origin stories, we get to watch Rob bring this painting to life behind us. It really is a one-of-a-kind episode. We've never done anything like it before or since, but shooting in Rob's studio, it did have some challenges. It obviously is not soundproof, so it's just a tiny bit more echoey maybe than we were used to. And also, we would sort of stop and talk to Rob here and there, and that gave the episode sort of a meandering flow of conversation quality to it, not maybe as snappy as you're normally used to from our stuff. So What we decided to do for this one is, in honor of Time Spiral Remastered, we remastered this old episode of our show, and we've done some things like we did better audio engineering, so it's going to sound a lot better. We added a bunch of extra visuals just to keep it engaging and interesting, and we also cut down the conversation so that it's a little bit more snappy, more focused, and shorter for sure, which was a good thing because the original episode was kind of long. So one other thing to note here that before we begin is that we recorded this episode before Jimmy was cast in the movie Mulan. So it's going to be interesting, hopefully, for you to hear his perspective before all that happened. And maybe you can hear him when you listen to new episodes of the show, how his perspective has changed since. So again, this has always been one of Jimmy and my favorite episodes when people ask us, you know, our favorite episodes of our show. So whether you're watching it for the first time or the second or third time, we hope you enjoy it.
So, a lot of you might know me as an actor. It's what I started out in Los Angeles as originally. I've been in a lot of different shows. I've made YouTube channels over the years. I'll just give a quick breakdown of what I've been in. The biggest thing I've been in is a show called Video Game High School, which Josh worked on some of the trailers for. That's how I actually originally met Josh. It is a series that was created by my brother and his friends, and it's on Netflix. It's on YouTube. It's about an alternate reality that's set in the same timeline as where we are right now, but video games are sort of the main sport of the world. I call it the Harry Potter of video games. I play the Ron Weasley-esque character in that show.
It's so true.
Over three seasons, it was a blast. It was sort of how I got my first big acting start. Before then, I had been in a couple of movies, and I joined the union and stuff, but that was what really pushed me into a more of a larger spotlight.
And let's not downplay it here. Video Game High School is basically the biggest web series that's ever been created.
View-wise and
yeah, the number of views per episode are in the millions. It's basically of similar scale as far as the amount of people that watch it as like Mad Men or something. Like it's very, very big.
Yeah, I would suggest you guys check it out if you enjoy video games and sort of like cheesy, fun humor. I also did music on YouTube for a full year. That's where I originally made like a first viral video doing that. And past that, I made a cooking show called Feast of Fiction that still exists today. And in the last year and a half, I've been working a lot with Riot Games to be a host for a lot of their community content and collegiate content. And that's basically my career in LA up until now. This year is sort of a it's a grind. So every year it's not like, oh, this year I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. This year I'm actually getting, I've got more official representation. I'm signed by Gersh and I'm pitching some shows around town. That's sort of what my trajectory is this year. And I'm hoping to get a couple of shows made. So that's where I'm at right now. What about you, Josh?
Moved to LA like everybody else, wanted to make movies. I did a bunch of short films. Rob and I actually know each other because he was the production designer on a short film that I talked about long ago on the show. It's called Eli. We'll link it in the show notes because it is available on YouTube. Did it about, 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. It was the first sort of big film that I worked on where I directed that the trucks actually pulled up, and yeah. We actually had like a grip and lighting department and everything. We had an actor named David Anders who's, I think he was on like the Vampire Diaries. And I think he's on iZombie now as the lead.
Yeah, you would recognize him as soon as you saw him. We'll put a picture up as well for the video.
Yeah, so that was kind of the first big foray. I'd done a bunch of smaller short films before that. And then I also got involved as an editor doing movie trailers around that time, a little earlier. And I worked my way up, as many people do. I started like running tapes and making coffee. We'll talk about our past, experience as sort of younger people further on in the show, but I did have a background, so I knew how to edit. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't done trailers. And people don't understand how the trailer industry works. Most people think that the people who make the movies actually make the trailers for the movies and the previews, but that's not how it works at all. The studios hire out subcontractors. They'll usually hire a number of different companies to do trailers for the same movie. So let's say you're working on The Avengers, which is a movie I did work on. The studio will hire maybe four or five different companies, and they'll say, we want trailers from each of your companies. And each company is going to have two or three, maybe four of their editors do different trailers. So you're competing against, somewhere around 20 different people who are trying to make a trailer for that movie. And at the end of the day, they'll go through a long process, but one will get picked. That'll be the trailer that you see in theaters. And then movies like The Avengers will have multiples. And so I was in that process for many movies over the years. My big break was I cut the trailer for a movie called Evan Almighty, which was the sequel to Bruce Almighty when I was working at Universal. I also worked on movies like Wanted, Fast and Furious, Star Wars Episode 7. I worked on some movies I can't talk about because they haven't come out yet.
You made the iconic trailer for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which was one of my favorite trailers of all time.
That's my favorite trailer that I've ever done. Yeah, that's true. I got to work with Edgar Wright on that one. That was really cool. He's a really cool guy. So that's been sort of my career up till this point. But I did move to LA to make movies as a director. So that's something that, if we're talking about this year and the trajectory that we'd like to be on, that's something that I've set as a goal for this year, is to sort of get behind the camera more and tell some more
stories
as I sit in front of the camera. Yeah. And game nights is a way to sort of stretch that muscle, mm-hmm. and to sort of get back in the flow of that, which, because it is storytelling and it is, you know, it does use a lot of your directing chops, I'd say.
So. Yeah. A lot of people usually are curious about this sort of stuff. We're going to talk very briefly about our lives in general, sort of where we grew up, where we went to school, what brought us to LA. So, Josh, where did you grow up?
I'm a Pacific Northwest kid, just like you. I grew up a little bit south. You're Seattle. I was Portland area. Mm-hmm. Little town called Canby, Oregon. Very small when I was growing up. I think it had less than 5,000 people. It's ballooned now. It's huge. It's like 14,000.
What got you interested in entertainment? Was it something that you did in high school or?
You know, it's funny because it's just a little bit of luck. My dad always loved movies, and we watched a lot of movies as kids. And then my dad ended up running the local access cable mm-hmm. channel of our little town.
Ah.
And so I'm the guy that kind of grew up with a camera in his hand because my dad just always had the equipment. And so I learned to edit, and I'm going to put that in quotes because it wasn't editing like we know it now, but I learned to edit at a very young age, maybe like 6 or 7, about how to like cut together pictures, and I was playing with the cameras in the backyard. So I was very lucky in that respect. I also had access to, this is going to sound funny, but there's what we call non-linear editing, which is what just editing is now. But when editing first was on a computer for the first time, it was revolutionary because it used to be that if you were editing something together and you wanted to change something in the middle, you couldn't keep everything that happened after that.
Yeah.
But because computers didn't exist, so you had to sort of recut everything that you'd cut. And so I remember when it was called Avid, the first Avid editor. Yep. was available. My dad actually managed to get enough funding to get it at the local access cable channel, and so we had access to it. I think I was like 12-ish.
Oh, wow.
And so I was in there learning that. So that's one of the reasons I say, like, oh, I was lucky. I already knew how to edit when mm-hmm. I came to LA.
Did you find that you were naturally drawn to it, or just do you think your dad having already been in that industry helped out a lot?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I hear, and this, I'm not, these are going to sound like grandiose comparisons, but mm-hmm. I'm not equating myself to these people. But the stories you hear of people like Magic Johnson, who used to just, he would ride in the passenger side of the car on the way to school and dribble the basketball out the car window. Or Bill Gates just happened to have access to one of the first early punch card systems where he could be programming.
School schedules and classroom schedules, actually.
Yeah, and so, but that they just happened to have that available to them. I think it was at the library where he lived, or the school or whatever.
Yeah,
and it was
high school, actually.
Yeah, and it was one of the few in the nation, and Bill Gates just happened to be there, right? So is Bill Gates a genius, or is he just a person that happened to have access to something at that age that nobody else had access to? It's hard to separate those things, and I'm not saying I'm a genius. I'm just saying that I don't know whether or not I had a natural gravity mm-hmm. towards that stuff, or whether just access to it sort of gave me that. But I do know that I always wanted to, quote unquote, make movies since I was, you know, an early teenager, for sure.
Yeah.
So how about you? Was, you know, the thing is, I don't want to say the acting thing, because you mm-hmm. the stuff you're involved in is so much more than that. But was getting involved in the entertainment industry and the creative business something that always was in your mind as something you wanted to do, or did you sort of fall into it?
It definitely was something I fell into, I think, from a young age. And just going back to looking at, like, me being in, like, my preschool musical or whatever, I was always inclined to entertain mm-hmm. more than the idea of I'm going to be in the business, I'm going to do entertainment. I was always a very, very active kid. I was very loud, I was very boisterous, and had a lot of energy. So I was happy to perform. Performing wasn't something that scared me. I didn't have that sort of stage fright. Now, other things, like if you asked me to do, I don't know, like, at the time, like, write a paper, you know, that would terrify me. But, like, go up and say something in front of 1,000 people, sure, whatever. And Freddie it was also lucky in that our dad was, you know, he was a big technophile guy. He loved technology. He bought, like, the first Mac. He bought the NES when it first came out and was fascinated by all of it. And he got a camera for Freddie for sort of the family to record stuff. And Freddie and I sort of took it from him, and we started making our own mini videos at home when we were really young. We loved Star Wars, so we would take the pool cues from our, like, mini play pool set and film each other. And then Freddie would go in and painstakingly rotoscope every single frame and add some sound effects. Yeah, so we would have these lightsaber battles together, and that was like the sort of the first foray of us into like, oh cool, we can make our own home videos. Freddie took that a step further in high school by making a full movie and doing a lot of VFX stuff that ended up being his channel later. I wasn't as involved with the filmmaking process at that point, and I hadn't done much acting. I think I was just more of like a, I want to play video games as a kid. But when I got to college and when I got to outside of, at the end of high school, I started getting more interested in performance. And I started being in more plays because I was like, I can meet cute girls this way. And that sort of drew me into it. And I also just found that I enjoyed doing it. Like, I remember doing a mini stand-up set for whatever reason at like a school auditorium thing. And the thrill I got from having people interact with me laughing and like being able to talk to a bunch of people was
that,
something.
That audience response, right?
Yeah, the audience response was something I never forgot. And, you know, being so active on the internet as kids as well, I think really contributed to us being comfortable doing YouTube. Like, I've never had a problem, you know, trying to figure out how Twitter works or how YouTube comments work, you know, or how to just talk with an online audience, because we were using Instant Messenger as really young kids. So what I think really drew me into it is just a combination, like you said, it's a combination of experiences you have as a kid that, you know, it's what you know best and it's what you're most comfortable doing. And if you're able to translate that into a career, and fortunately for us, the entertainment career is something that sort of molds well into that, then you're going to hopefully enjoy what you're going to be doing later on and hopefully use what you grew up with. How about college? Did you continue this into university?
It's funny you should mention, because I went to college and they didn't have a film program at the school I went to, and I didn't have a lot of money for school, so I just went to a little school, and they had a theater.
Ah.
They had a theater group, and so that's how I got into, and I'd done it a little in high school, because again, in high school, it's kind of the closest thing I could get, and the performance and the audience reaction thing is definitely very powerful, and I think anybody that's involved in entertainment, even if you're a director or whatever, has that gene where they like the audience to be reacting in the way that they had planned for them to react, right?
Right.
It just tickles that part of your brain, whether or not you like to actually stand in front of the people. I've also been like you, where I've never had a problem. Just like if somebody wanted me to give an impromptu speech, I would just probably be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason. But
it's thrilling for me. It's like,
yeah, but it's tough for a lot of people. And I understand that, you know, like my girlfriend, for instance, would never do it. She would 100% refuse because she hates being in front of crowds. And so the theater thing was natural for me. So I went into the theater. It's where I learned improv. And so many of these things, I think you're probably the same way, things like improv in school and whatnot. It seems really narrow when you're learning it, and you learn as you go through life that all the lessons learned and things like that are so useful in other areas of your life.
Yeah. Cross-applying lessons learned in every single aspect of your life is one of the best things I've sort of like learned to innately do. And I think a lot of us already do it without realizing it. And the more you can sort of hone in on that, the better you're going to have time in life, I think.
So basically for me, yeah, that was school. I did theater, and, we have down here a decision to move to LA. What happened is one of my friends from my improv group had got into the filmic writing school at University of Southern California, USC, where Freddie went, which is sort of the Harvard Law of film schools. And I came down to visit him. This was a couple years after I was done with school. And I was in LA visiting my friend, and I remember we went to a movie. And we were in line for the movie, and the people behind us were like talking about a script they'd wrote, and the people in front of us were talking about an audition they had. We went to dinner afterwards, and there was like an agent talking to his, you know, screenwriter client at the table, and there was like, you know, I think like Michael Clark Duncan was like at a table over there.
Oh wow.
And you know, God rest his soul. And I was just like, I have to move here. Because everyone around me is just like, they're talking about movies, they're talking about creative things, and the vibe of the city was just like magnetic to me.
Right.
And I literally went home and I gave the notice of my apartment, and I didn't really have a great plan, but I was like, I'm moving to LA. And that's how I decided to move. How about you? Let's talk about, you know.
So college was...
Higher education.
Yeah, higher education, right? So I grew up in Seattle, and Freddie went to USC Film. And at the time, I was like, I don't really want... Because I've always been his younger brother, and he has had an enormous amount of success. So it's always hard to feel like, you know, like, oh, you're trapped in the shadow of your older, more successful, popular sibling or whatever. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to go to the same area of school as Freddie. I did actually apply to like Pomona and some schools in the area. I decided,
you went way.
Yeah, I flew across the country and I went to Vermont, and I went to a small liberal arts college called Middlebury out there. And
I think you've worn the shirt on the show.
Yes, I've worn the shirt a couple of times. I did theater there, but I tell this to everyone that asks. I learned more in a year in LA acting wise than I did in 4 years of theater. at college, because I think the raw experience of getting out there was more effective than any theory or any sort of, because I think being able to, I mean, it's the same reason that you were drawn to LA and the same reason that when I went to LA, I was like, I should live here, is that you are not just practicing it in your head, you're doing it in person. You're physically moving yourself to do the things that are going to make you better as an artist. So the reason I came to LA, I was deciding between here and New York. I came to LA because one, Freddie was here and we could share a rent and make it a lot cheaper.
It's a big thing though.
And I think I understood the basic idea of like, if people are here and they're doing the thing that are similar to you, you're better off being close to them because then you're open to meeting them, collaborating with them, being friends with them, working with them in the future, helping them out when they need it. So that was like very obvious to me. And I moved out to LA, and for the first year, again, I didn't really have a plan. I didn't make any money. Freddie had to support me the entire time. Regardless, we were still only paying like $250 in rent a month, because we shared a room in five different people and we both slept in the same bed in this tiny 9x11 room for a full year.
I love those stories. I tell this story to a lot of people when they move to LA, because it's tough. And I'm just going to use LA to stand in for any place like this, New York, Chicago, anytime. People are very often scared to move to that place that's away from their home and their safety. And it's always going to be rough for a little while. And mm-hmm. and so many people have gone through it. And my philosophy is always like, there's 10 million people in LA.
Yeah.
If 10 million people can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And when I first moved to LA, you know what I did? I sold my EverQuest account. And I used that money as the down payment on the apartment with my buddy.
Nice.
And when we paid for first and last month's rent and security deposit, we had $23 between the two of us to our name. And we went to the grocery store because we weren't getting paid for 2 weeks. We were both waiters. And we said, what's the most food we can buy for $23? And it was mac and cheese and top ramen. So that we just got as much of that as we could. Lived off that for 3 or 4 days. So we had, you know, enough money from tips. And then,
it's interesting you say you sold your EverQuest account, because the one thing that changed when I went to college was I quit playing World of Warcraft obsessively.
Speaking of which.
Yeah, right. And it was a huge change for me, because at that point I was obsessed with the game. I didn't do anything else but play that game. And there was, I you know, you don't see it when you're in the middle of it, but there's literally no future for someone that wants to do anything else in life if you're just going to play a video game obsessively.
Yeah, like I think they're great escapes and they're great to play, but once you get to the level where that's your life, yeah.
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 The map of that road going forward is not, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you're in LA.
So now we're both in LA.
We made
and, I should mention, because I get asked, I've gotten asked this multiple times now. Never took one class on editing.
Ah.
I've never taken a course of any kind that had to do with editing. Now, I've learned many things along the way, because over the course of becoming an editor and sort of, you know, being around other editors, mm-hmm. you end up talking about things. But as far as like ever having any sort of like real actual class, you've taken acting classes, I'm sure.
I've taken acting classes. Out of all the acting classes I've taken, the improv classes were by far the most influential, because they taught me a mentality above a skill, if that makes sense. The mentality of improv, and Josh obviously knows this, and you'll hear this a lot, is the idea of yes and. And I think it's the heart of all collaboration, is being able to say yes and instead of no, how about, or no, but I want this. So for instance, if
anything that starts with no, but
you're not going to get anywhere. So instance, if we were in an improv scene, I would come up to Josh and be like, boy, it is sure hot out on the moon today. And Josh has two roads here he can take.
Yes. Now the notice what happens if he says that it's sure hot on the moon today. And I go, no, it's not. It's cold.
The scene literally dies. There's nothing left. There's no connection between the two other than you're disagreeing with each other.
Yep.
Or if Josh was like, no, we're in the supermarket. What the heck are you supposed to do then?
Now he just killed you. But if I say, yeah, man, the way that the aliens pulled the sun so close to us and it's just like frying us like crazy.
So by saying yes and the and is adding more information, now we know that we're on the moon and that the aliens have something to do with it and that we're there because for whatever reason, but you have a whole world now to work off of. And from that, I can say like, yeah, man, oh gosh, dude, do you still have scars from the cufflinks or whatever? You know, like from the chains, shackles, you know, you can add in more information when you say yes and stuff. And that, I think, was the most important acting class I've ever taken. But
yeah, I learned improv a decade before you, and we had a different term for it, which was accept all offers.
Ah, yes.
But yes and is the exact same philosophy.
Yeah, it's an offer, being like, hey, we're here, we're doing this. Yes, I accept that offer and I will continue to build upon that. Yeah, no classes, huh?
Not for editing. Obviously for improv and theater I did, which has been very helpful on this show.
Yeah, for sure.
okay, so we're in LA. And we're going to talk about career evolution a little bit. We've taken a little long time on our, longer than we thought on our origin story. So we hope you'll bear with us.
I mean, we have to have a good origin movie to really set the set the sequel up.
Let's talk about, so the first, you're sleeping on a bed with Freddy.
A twin size bed. It was tiny.
Oh, a twin?
Yeah, we were doing this. So both of our feet were at each other's head.
It's kind of cute. Actually.
Yeah, I would kick him every time he snored. I taught him how to not snore after a year.
Through conditioned response?
I conditioned him, yeah. Because he finally figured out, oh, if I do this, I'm not going to get kicked in the middle of the night. But he was never awake to realize it. So it was very much a hypnotic sort of thing.
That's awesome. You have a really good story for this. So what was your first big break?
My first big break, I had a couple of different ones, actually. When I first came to LA, I was like, I'm going to do acting for a full year. Freddie had like 2 million subscribers on YouTube at that point, but I was like, there's no acting on YouTube. It's all skits and dumb things. I don't want to do any of that. And at the time, it's kind of true. It's changed a lot now, obviously. I was auditioning and stuff. I was like, if you are an employee of Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, I am the employee that is like, how to pull the fire alarm. Like, that's me.
Awesome.
Or it might have been, it was one of the cruise lines. But after a year, I got into a movie called John Dies at the End, which was a lot of fun. I got
still gets called out for this a lot.
Yeah, I got to work with Don Coscarelli, who's a legendary sort of horror film director. He did the Phantasm series. And I met a lot of really great people and learned a lot from doing just like a few days on that set. Chase Williamson, one of the actors that worked on VGHS, is in that show because I met him on that set. After that year, though, I was like, I'm not getting any work. I'm making $0 still. I paid all the money I made from the movie to join the union, and it didn't make a difference. So I decided to do YouTube, but I decided to do music instead. And
I'd say this is the really big one.
Yeah, this is the break. This is what shot me into continuing everything that I'm doing today, for sure. And it was, at the time, I was like, I'm going to do covers. I'm going to do fun original songs. And someone from UCLA, a sorority girl, posted a video online, a rant about Asians in the library and how they were too loud and obnoxious and she needed to study for her very important exams. This also happened about a week after Japan suffered a major tsunami from the earthquake. And so there was a lot of attention on Asia at that point. And she puts out this video mocking Asians, essentially, with a mock Chinese accent and everything.
Yeah, and mock Chinese dialogue.
Yeah, and I still get called that today, crazily enough, 5 years later. That's still around. Freddie looked at me and was like, you should do a song about this. I'm like, I should. And so I wrote a comedic retort to her that was sort of gently shutting her down. And sort of changing the terminology of the words are ching chong, and I changed it into means I love you.
Ching chong,
it means I love you.
Ling long,
I really want you.
Ting tong,
I don't actually know what that means.
Ching chong,
it's never ending.
Ling long,
my head is spinning.
Ting tong,
still don't know what that means.
To sort of take a twist on the whole thing, and that video blew up. I got interviewed by NPR, I was on CNN, MSNBC, a bunch of different networks and stuff, and that like threw me it was like a tidal wave of attention and force driving me forward, and that's sort of what started everything.
Yeah, that's the wave you caught that you're in some ways still riding.
Yeah, and I would say the way I tell people about it now is that it was a very good thing to happen because it brought me to the attention of a lot of people. I got to meet a lot of people as a result and work with a lot more people and get sort of have a, like a baseline of respect from people so that I could like have a conversation with them without being like, who the heck are you? At the same time, it was such a powerful wave of force that I didn't feel like I was ever surfing it. I felt like I was in the tidal wave, tumbling around, being like, I think I'm going in the right direction. Hope I land somewhere nice.
It's almost like you can't control it exactly.
Yet. Yeah. It was like a wild river, a wild tidal wave. It was just too much for me to control, and I was so young at the time, I didn't understand what it meant to be like, all right, here's how you can take control of your career right now, having done that. But it was all good things, obviously. It pushed me forward.
That's still one of my favorite things you've ever done, because the brilliance of taking the tact that you did is hard to understand if you haven't seen the video, but instead of going at the person in a negative way, you went at her in a positive way. Yeah, the power of that is something I think everybody can learn from.
Yeah, and that was a lot from improv, you know. And also just like also seeing a lot of people throw death threats at someone. I'm like, no one should ever have a death threat thrown at them.
Yeah.
Like,
and what does that accomplish? And how's that likely to change anyone's mind? We're at the other, going in the completely other direction and sort of talking about love in that moment is like,
I don't know, man. It was really good.
It was sublime. I may never do anything as good about that in the rest of my life.
Okay, I hope you're enjoying the conversation so far about Jimmy and my origin stories. When we come back, we're going to talk about my career in the trailer business. If you've ever been interested about how that works or what I did, the ups and the downs, we're going to get into all that. And then we're going to talk about why Jimmy and I transitioned into creating magic content. But first, let's take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right, Josh, what about you? Did you have a big break?
You know, in the trailer world, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit harder to have that kind of break, although maybe it sort of happens. But I did have a string of successes. And I talked about before how that industry is a little bit like a bake-off and that there's a lot of people competing. And so people always ask me, there's two things you get asked as a trailer editor all the time. Well, three things. One is, do you get to see the movies first? Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
And they're very unfinished states.
Yeah, and I should say, when I say trailer editors, it's a little bit segmented within that group, but the people who cut the long form trailers that actually go into the theaters and are the ones that sort of premiere online that are like 2 minutes or so, those people get to work on the movie very early. And these days, very often we're seeing every single take from the movie. So the movie's not done. So when you say, have you seen the movie? There's no movie. There's a bunch of raw footage. Mm-hmm. Do I see all that? Yes. Not on every movie too. There's certain directors that only allow you to see certain things. But anyway, the other question is, why do you guys always give away the endings? This is the audience's fault. When you go into test screenings, just stop asking to see everything and then we'll stop showing it. But the problem is when people go into test screenings, they always want to know more. And so then the testing numbers come back and they're like, well, they want to know more. And so you end up putting in way too much stuff. Because naturally all of us are storytellers and we don't want to give away stuff. But the studio is sitting there going like, this is what people want. This will make them go see the movie. Put that in there.
Yeah. Reshoot all of this. Spend X number of dollars to make this
change
work
this,
for
yeah.
the audience that didn't like it in the test screening.
So what happened is I won the bake-off as... as I call it, for that movie, Evan Almighty, which was at the time a big movie for Universal, didn't end up doing well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was my first like big trailer on a big movie. And, you know, I'd been competing with a lot of people and mine got chosen. And as a result, I got what happens just like in the acting business or anything else, they start asking for you to work on specific things after that. So we're like, let's get that Josh guy and try him to do this. And the next movie was this movie called The Kingdom, with what's his name, Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
And I won that Bake Off. And the next movie was
Cookies for All.
Mr. Bean's Holiday.
I did not know you did the trailer for that.
Well, there's a lot you don't know about me, Jimmy.
Yeah, it's true.
And I won that Bake Off. And the next movie was Wanted. And Wanted was, I would call it my big break, but it was led by those things. I never would have got that opportunity. And
right.
In Wanted, I really was, there's a point you get to, and you probably know this too, which is when you've got a lot of success behind you, the power that you're wielding at that moment is very strong. And I think something we may go into later, but I'll go into it a little bit here, is in the creative field of any kind, there's this really interesting dynamic, which is that nobody knows anything, right? Rob's gonna paint a picture. You know, he's gonna paint something awesome. How do you know it's awesome?
Right.
Nobody knows. Now, I'm going to think it's awesome maybe, and Rob probably won't because he always thinks his stuff is bad, even though it's awesome. Jimmy's probably going to look at it and think, but how do you know it's awesome? There's no way to know. Now, I know when I made a basket and my team won the game.
That was awesome.
I know when I ran a race and crossed the finish line before everybody else, but I don't know when my painting is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I just know when I think it's awesome. And so when you have that tidal wave of success coming, that momentum behind you, at that moment, so much of in the creative field, what sort of determines whether something's good or not is people's opinion of it. And people's opinion is affected by other people's opinion. And those other people's opinion can be the creator of the thing. And so when you're in that position, which I was with Wanted, where I had a lot of momentum and I wanted to get things done and I had strong opinions about how that movie should be marketed, that was a point in time in which people were listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was a force at that moment, right? So I got to do cool things like write a speech that Morgan Freeman eventually read. But that was kind of, I would say, the moment where at that moment, then it became like, let's get Josh to work on every movie we can.
And Josh then moved into his $2 million house. And
that's not how the trailer business works.
That's not how it works, yeah.
Yeah. But that was, I would say, my big break. That's when they started getting me to work on, I'm not working on Mr. Bean's Holiday anymore. You know,
right.
It's like what's the biggest movie we got? Let's have him work on that.
And that's what obviously brought you to now. Your most recent project that you can talk about was you worked on The Force Awakens.
Correct. Yeah. So that was
literally the biggest movie
of all time.
Yeah. Outside of maybe a James Cameron flick.
My good friend who I've worked with for years and years. Yeah. During episode 7, we just looked at each other at one point and we're like, we're working on Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know? Like, did you ever think at some point when you were a kid, that was the dream? Star Wars, you were talking about with me too.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars was the pinnacle of it. So,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Hope to still someday be in one. Who knows? Maybe not.
Dude, they're making 57,000 of them. You've got a good shot.
I got a good shot.
Yeah.
All right, let's just think about an Asian hero that was in the original trilogy that they're going to make a prequel about. Shoot.
What are you talking about? It's perfect. Donnie Yen.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be a young Donnie Yen.
Yeah. They can only make the prequel. No spoilers.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So how was it, by the way? Because obviously you've worked at a lot of different editing houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the decision like to move from one to the next? Or if someone's like, hey, I want you to work here. Does it ever feel like, oh, I don't want to leave this job because it seems like things are going so well?
I have a philosophy, and it is that you need to move around. And staying, I really have a philosophy in generally in life that is like a shark, right? Not in the way that we think of like Shark Tank, but if you have to keep moving or you will die, and you have to keep evolving. And we've talked about on the show about how our goal for the show is constant evolution and improvement. That's our goal for game nights. That's gonna be our goal for anything that we do, because that's the thing Jimmy and I share about life in general, is there's not a reason to do something unless I'm pushing a limit in some way, trying something I haven't tried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this episode of the show. Well, this is not normally what we do, but risk and trying things is, that to me is what creativity is almost about.
Right.
And so I've never been a person that ever wants to get comfortable, because comfort is the time where I'm not doing my best work. I'm doing my best work in anything I'm doing when I need to prove myself, when there's pressure upon me, there's questions about how good it'll be, when it's mm-hmm. when I don't even know, can I do it?
Yeah.
You know, and also there's just this learning thing that happens. Like anytime you're at a place for, let's say you're at a place for 5 years. By the fifth year, are you learning anything? You know exactly how that place works. You know what their philosophy is. You know everything. If you go to a new place now, they look at things in a totally different light. So I'm learning stuff. I now am filling out my skill set. Mm-hmm. I've always looked at it that way. How about you? Because you, yeah. in your type of gig, it's even more, right? Because each gig is often just one time or just two times or just two episodes or what, you know?
Yeah, and it's different because I don't work at a place that guarantees a salary or benefits or anything. You live, I mean, I'll also say this, for the first 2.5 years I was in LA, I did not make money. Basically, any single cent that I made was spent on food and lodging and living expenses. There was nothing in the savings. There was nothing for me to put forward because I didn't have anything sustained. I would work on something and then have 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, sometimes months off at a time, and then you'd work on something else and that would barely sustain you through the next thing. So it was almost out of necessity that you're like, you know, you're like an animal. You're like the polar bear that has its ice caps melting. You know, you need to find safe ground and you're constantly searching for it. And if you're not searching for it, then you're just going to be stagnant. And I think the thing that kills a lot of careers out here in acting and stuff is that people don't get success. And instead of being like, it could just be around the corner, it could be tomorrow, it could be the next minute someone could call me, I'm just going to stop trying because it doesn't seem like it's coming right now. And there's a lot of, and maybe it's just our generation kind of thing, but there's a lot of, because we get instant satisfaction from our phones, you get instant satisfaction from being able to be like, I don't like this Command Zone video anymore, I'm going to go watch a cat video. You can do it immediately without having to blink an eye or do any extra work outside of typing some words in, that people think they get, that it, when something becomes like, oh, you're not getting the success you want at this very moment, then you should give up. And I think that happens to a lot of people in careers like acting, because it's not just like you're not getting that success. You're also not being able to pay your bills. You're hungry. You're not happy because you can't go out with your friends. And so people take the negativity and they turn it into like, well, this just means I shouldn't be doing this, which I think is not the case in creativity, in the creative world.
Well, it goes back to what I was saying earlier too, with something like acting or anything in the creative field, it's also hard for you to have peace of mind yourself that you have advanced.
Right.
Because it's so difficult to tell. Is if you're a painter and you painted a painting and you think it's good, but nobody else does, and then you do another one and the same thing happens, and you do another one, and a couple years down the line, you could look at it and be like, have I improved? You probably have, but how can you tell? And yeah. That I think is really discouraging to people. I don't think that this generation thing holds a lot of weight. I think it's just always been the case, is that perseverance. If you could give one single trait to your kids, if it was me, it would be 100% perseverance above everything else. I would rather have a kid that's not as smart as another kid, but has more perseverance. I think that's the number one trait that will give you success in any field, especially the creative field. And you don't think that, right? Because you think creativity is some kind of spark, some kind of thing that like some people got struck by lightning and they can, mm-hmm. They can't draw stick figures, but they can do this.
Right.
I guarantee you Rob has put in so much time into what he knows how to do that's a huge part of his success. Now, is there innate talent? Of course there is. Like I could maybe never have become a painter, but that doesn't mean I couldn't be successful in the creative field.
Yeah, and I think perseverance is a very good thing to, I think, espouse in terms of like just overall perseverance in any field whatsoever is important, because putting the hours in work-wise is more important than anything else. And that's something that my parents worked into me coming from a pretty strict household, because it was all about you are the person that's going to determine your own success always. Like other people can congratulate you, other people can say you're bad, but at the very end of the day, it's down to you to do the work and to make the thing that's going to happen. Because I personally, if I look at myself critically, I don't think I'm a very creative person. I think I'm just a very, very hardworking person that puts myself in positions to make creative decisions when I get to it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think, and that's part of being an artist too, is learning to fully understand the scope of what you can and can't do. I know that I can put in the man hours to make something look good, and I can learn from the best and use the skill set that I have of persevering and like putting the hours in and watching tutorials and stuff. But at the end of the day, I don't know if I could personally sit there and make something up from nothing, right? Like that's not a skill set I have. When I, like, for instance, when I drew a lot as a kid, I was always very, very good at looking at something like that chair or this camera and drawing exactly that. I could mimic it one-to-one very well in my, like right here, but I wasn't creating anything. And that to me didn't say like, Jimmy, you're not creative. You shouldn't do anything in the creative industry. It said, Jimmy, this is your skill set here. You're very good at taking something and making something out of it. And some people are better at taking nothing and making something out of it. And it's all very different. But at the end of the day, the one thing that ties all of us together is the ability to persevere and do a lot of hard work through all of it.
Yep. And
but,
I
put the hours in.
It's that fraud thing creeping into that little right. bit of like when you peek behind the curtain, it's not what you think it was. If people look at people like Rob, sometimes people like you, Jimmy, because to hear you say that, I laugh, right? He's not a creative guy. It's laughable. It's hilarious. It's not, there's no way it's possibly true. And yet he believes what he just said. And I feel sort of the same way. And that's laughable too. Because when you're the person that's behind the curtain, you see the machinery and you understand like it's yeah. not magic like we thought it was. But to people on the outside, it does. What Rob's doing, it looks mystical, but it's not.
I mean, he's moving around like a mystic, yeah. that's for sure.
But it is built on the same principles of hard work and learning all these things and learning all the techniques and borrowing and stealing from where you do and putting it all together in your own way.
Yeah, I believe a lot of artists have said this, but Dali is the one I think most attributed to it, whereas bad artists copy, great artists steal, or good artists copy, great artists steal, which is the idea that like, you can sit around and copy stuff all day, but the real people that make real stuff are the ones that steal an idea and then do something to it themselves to either improve on it or change up what it is exactly. And I think if you look behind the curtain, and this is why I love magic as well, the actual idea of magic and magic tricks, and that's what the whole idea of filmmaking is that it's movie magic for a reason, and that if you go on set and you see how they actually do something, for me, that doesn't take the magic away. It makes the magic understandable, which is really exciting to me. Which is, I think everyone should watch The Prestige if you have a chance. It's a great movie about magic. And a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies are about filmmaking in the film itself. Inception is very much like that as well. But it's a great way to learn, sort of figure out like, oh, I understand how the behind the curtain idea. Okay, let's talk some big picture stuff now. We've detailed sort of what our lives have been up to this point. What drives you, Josh Glaquai, every day to get up and do the things you do?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I saw that written on here. I'm not exactly sure how to answer it. I think a little of it is that audience reaction thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that connecting to your audience and having them, like Game Nights is a really good exploration of that, which is right. just the response has been really good. We're doing something, I think, in a way that hasn't quite been done before. Now, just like you said, we've taken little pieces and little things and we've packaged it all together in a way, I think, that hasn't been seen before. And so that's always really fun and fulfilling.
Yeah, I should clarify that when I said great artists steal, I'm not saying steal in a negative sense whatsoever.
Not whole cloth steal, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, stealing is in you're taking an idea that you really liked. And filmmakers do this all the time. If you look, like ask someone, hey, who's your favorite filmmaker? Steven Spielberg, great. Do you think you've stolen things from him that he's done? And they'd be like, of course I have.
And Steven Spielberg stole from people before him. In fact, the movie we've mentioned the most, Star Wars, Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
A lot of stolen, admittedly, from Lucas will say,
yeah.
directly from that.
Yeah. And it's effective because it's been done before in a lot of ways too. So when I say steal, I'm not saying in a negative sense. In fact, when you're filming something, you'll say like, hey, can we cheat this? Can we steal this shot? And you're using those terms because it's like in magic, you're always trying to get an edge in any way whatsoever. And oftentimes that is one of the ways to get it.
Yeah. So what drives you every day?
Oh, geez. Honestly, I don't even know anymore. At this point, I have this thirst inside me. I think ever since I came to LA, it's been part about proving myself to the world, proving that I can do this thing that I really want to do. And also at the same time, there has always been a part of me that wants to change the world for the better. I think that's why I made that original song to that girl from UCLA. I think for me, the Asian American representation in Hollywood, I think is still just completely unacceptable. I think you can name many famous black actors, Hispanic actors.
Even though they're underrepresented too.
Exactly. And European actors. And we're all minorities, you know, but at the same time, why aren't there major Asian names outside of like three or four, right? I always ask people this question and it always baffles me that people didn't realize this before, but how many times have you seen Jet Li or Jackie Chan kiss a girl in a movie? Like that, it's in itself may not be a huge thing that you think about when you watch an action movie, but it actually is a very pervasive thing, I think, in society where there's been this weird demasculinization of Asians, as well as an over-sexualization of Asian women that it just really puts you in the minority camp. And to me, when I first entered to be an actor and wanted to do this sort of work, a big driving factor, and it still is today, is I want to change how people see Asians in Hollywood, specifically on camera, because there's a lot of Asian American representation behind the camera and people working for the companies and editors like yourself, but there isn't as much in front. And I think that is something that needs to change and will change, and hopefully I can be on the forefront of that. So that's one of the things that drives me every day.
I think that demonstrates one of the things that's powerful about art is the ability, its special ability, to change people's minds and perceptions in a way that nothing else can.
Right.
It always baffles me when people get really mad that people like at the Oscars are being political or politicizing. And I don't care if you agree with them or not. That's not the point. The point is that that's what art is. It's having a perspective. That's what creativity is. It's having a perspective. It's not supposed to be vanilla like everything else. It's supposed to say, no, here's a lens through which to see the world that's different than the one. And then that's, you know, Rob does that with his paintings, and, you know,
directors do that with their movies,
and bands do that with their music. And so that, I think that's a really good answer. And I believe that's one of the reasons that I get up every day too, is to sort of put that my own lens on the world and show it to other people.
Yeah, and one of the things we do with game nights to paint it the world that we want it to is, like, we don't enter a game nights episode and think, I'm going to get salty over this game. I'm going to argue with people. I'm going to be a rules lawyer. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. You know, like, we choose decks because we want them to be fun. We want to engender a better playing experience for people around the world. And that is the lens that we present that series through. On purpose.
Yeah, I really like what you said there. And, you know, I think people who don't understand this part don't understand the creation of things like that. But Game Nights definitely has goals. And one of those goals can be to show what we want about Magic to people, right? We're not shooting Game Nights as a way to just, you know, have you watch Magic. We also want to show it through the lens that we want to show it through. And one of the ways is, like, this is one way that if you see it, you might try, and it might make your games more fun. And being able to share that with people is really important. And one of the ways to do that is to, like, a lot of people have mentioned just how fun our group looks. Well, we're consciously trying to have as much fun as possible. And the funny thing about that is when you do that, you actually have more fun.
Yeah. It's like, if you smile enough, you actually become a happier person.
Yep.
And it's like your brain kind of gets into that mode. It's not like we're faking it ever either. Like, when we first started playing together, one of the reasons we wanted to do a podcast is, like, we enjoy this a lot. And we have fun for a lot of reasons, and we don't like certain things for certain reasons too. And we don't want people to be salty or angry. And we get these things all the time, but we specifically have always rallied against that personally, I think, as well as when we're playing in the groups that we're playing in. We're trying to yes and constantly.
Yeah.
You know, play the decks you want. Yes, do what you want. Maybe it shuts down my deck and you're saying no. But to me, it's like the counterspell deck isn't saying no to me. It's saying, Jimmy, yes, you can do something about this and build a deck to, like, respond to it or whatever, you know?
You know, there, it's two questions away, but I want to jump to it just because it ties into this, which is, what does it mean to be creative, quote unquote, be creative? And I've always thought it's a really tough question to answer, but I've always thought it really, when you boil it down, it's setting goals for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not, it's your own, you, like, in the creative world, you have to set the goal for yourself. Your goal is, like, I have a story I want to tell, or I have a painting I want to paint, or I have a feeling I want to convey, and I'm going to do that through a song or a painting or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, Game Nights is no different. We're using Game Nights a lot because we think it's probably a common thing that people know about. But in any of your work, you have to set the goal. You've set the goal, and then you figure out the path to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
And so goal setting for yourself is such a huge part of being creative, I think.
Yeah, I like that a lot, setting a goal and being creative in the ways that you get to that goal as well, because this can apply to a corporate environment, which is like, hey, I really want to get this promotion, or hey, I really want to make sure that at the next meeting, this idea that I have goes through. Creativity comes in every single aspect of everyone's lives. And even though I say I'm not a creative person, I'm doing creative things all the time, which is the idea of try to think outside the box a little bit, try to approach something from a different angle and see if it works better that way. Like, if you're hammering away at something and it's a square in a round hole, like, maybe it's not going to work if you keep doing it the same way you are.
But a creative person goes, okay, well, what are my options? Can I make the circle into a square or the square into a circle?
Right.
Can I go look for something else? A person who's not as creative or isn't thinking creatively says, oh, it can't be done.
Yeah. And I think that, again, it all boils down to the yes and no that you're answering to yourself in life. And I think the more you answer no, the quite more often you're closing off creative routes and just the idea to be more open-minded about something. I think what it means to be creative for me, and this has been influenced a lot by traveling a lot as much as I can, meeting a lot of different people. And every time I go somewhere, not to stay inside my hotel room and not engage with the world, but to go out there and be like, this is different than what I know. And there's something very important about that, because these people are all living their lives in a different way. And it's different than anything I've ever known. Instead of being like, no, they're doing it wrong, or no, they can't be right because of X, Y, and Z. It's more, how are they right? How are they different? And being open-minded. And I think that lends itself to being a more creative spirit in general. And it's brought me a lot of happiness in life, because you just find that things don't get you down as easily if you're able to approach it from a more like, oh, maybe I can think about it in a different way and put it in a different framework. And that helps out a lot. I think for just general like life happiness, I would recommend trying to be more open-minded always.
It ties back into that idea of the stealing things, right? Well, you can't steal something if you don't know about it, right?
Point.
And so adding as many little pieces of knowledge to your little toolbox, it's like magic, right? If I build a toolbox deck, what's in there are all the pieces that I might need in different moments. Well, you can do that in life too, but you can't have things in your toolbox that you just don't know about. And so pushing yourself outside your comfort zone and, you know, experiencing things that maybe it would be easier to just sort of shut the door and not go out when you're in a strange town and you're there for some other business, but making yourself go out there and experience things puts things in your toolbox that you can pull out for later.
Yeah.
I really like that.
I think as gamers and as people that are more prone to be shut inside than going outside, it's tough for a lot of people to sort of get this mentality really solidified in their life. And I think that is something that we have to look out for constantly, because, you know, if I stayed in my room and played World of Warcraft for the rest of my life, I may have limited social interaction with people, and that is going to affect the way that I look at the world. And it's something to just be wary of, like, hey, you know, sometimes I need to look at myself and be like, I'm being the problem here because I'm being stubborn, or I'm refusing to admit this or do whatever. And a lot of times it's really tough to get to that realization without being open-minded to the idea that, one, it's okay to be the problem. You know, it's okay to not be the person that fits in or does something perfectly the first time. Like, it's life. You're going to be around for like, what, 70 to 90 years. If you make one mistake in this week of this day, think about the percentage that's going to take up your life. Are you going to let that become you, or are you going to grow from that and become something more outside of that?
We're all a work in progress.
Yes.
All right. So let's go back to, do you know why you do what you do?
I think this harkens back to the same idea of originally it was a lot about validation. I needed it, because, you know, I was a younger sibling. I felt like I didn't get it that as much, always being in the shadow sort of my older sibling. And from that, it turned into, I need to not just validate for myself. I want to validate for the entire race that I represent, and sort of the entire idea of, we're a new generation of filmmakers. We're a new generation of content creators. I want to make sure that I'm going out there and putting my best foot forward, because I'm a representative of a larger whole. That's why you'll see me rail against certain things on Twitter all the time, is because I think they're doing a really piss poor job sometimes of representing the community that I'm a part of and I helped build. And I will not stand to let someone else tear that down and not, or at the very least, make sure that people know that there are people that stand against something that I don't think is right. You know, I think that's really important. And I do that through art, and I do that through my words. But I think that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, this is another tough question, because like I mentioned earlier, this sort of audience reaction is a big deal. But I also, you know, people ask me what I want in life, and my usual answer is just creative satisfaction for myself. I just want to feel good about what I've done, you know? And I'm one of these people that I do care about the audience reaction, but I want them to have the reaction that I want them to have, because that validates what I've done as far as like, oh, I've properly set that up. Like, if there's a joke in Game Nights and it is funny and people like it, then it's like I've accomplished that.
Right.
You know, it's not that I want people to laugh. It's that I want them to have laughed because at that moment I thought that that was the right thing for the story. You know, it's a weird thing.
It's a very satisfying thing. And I think that's 100% why a lot of film gets made. It's why comedy exists. Is you're there to make other people laugh.
Yeah.
You think it's funny, but really the satisfaction is knowing that you can bring a little bit of that to someone else with an active choice you made.
But it could be make them scared. It could be make them on the edge of their seat. It could be make them, you know, sad. It could be all the things for whatever the story needs at that moment. But those my own creative satisfaction is fulfilled by things like that. And I think that ultimately that's really what I'm after, is just that feeling at the end of the day where you're like, I pulled that off.
All right. So do you have these sort of like overarching lessons that you've learned over doing things over and over again, repetition wise? It could be very specific, as in like in editing, I always know that now that this is sort of the right thing to do, or it could be more broad.
It's funny because the quote that you bring up about the copy you know, good artists copy and great artists steal.
Right.
I have a quote that's a go-to quote to mine that I think about constantly, and it was from Miles Davis, and he said that the difference between a good musician and a fair musician is that a good musician can play whatever they think of.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between a good musician and a great musician is what they think. And the funny thing about sayings like this are they evolve over time. And I don't know what Miles Davis meant by this quote, right?
Uh-huh.
I've never met the man, obviously.
Miles Davis, if you don't know, one of the greatest arguably the greatest musicians of all time, jazz musicians, trumpeter.
Yeah, maybe the greatest jazz musician of all time. I don't want to get into that argument. So at first it meant to me the lightning bolt thing, that some people have talent.
Oh.
You know, some people were touched by God or struck by lightning or
right.
Tinkerbell or whatever you want to call it, and they just have more talent than the rest of us.
Those are the great musicians.
Right, because that they just think differently than other people. But as I've grown older, I've realized that, no, it means if I'm striving for greatness, the problem is often how I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can change how I think.
Right.
And it's being able to change how you think that will make you great, not having an innate thought process that's different than somebody else's. It's just not getting caught.
Right, right.
And so that really gives a lot of power to you, because when you hit those walls in those moments, you go, okay, well, I need to change how I'm thinking about it.
Right.
And that's how I can achieve greatness, quote unquote. And so I don't know if that's a lesson I've learned along the way, because long ago in editing, I passed the point of fair to good. You know, I can pull off, I feel like I'm sure Rob feels this way about painting. You probably feel this way about acting, which is that if I'm called to do something, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody said, hey, we need to make this more fun, no problem. We need to make this more scary, no problem. We need to blah, blah, blah. I know how to do that. Now, the difference is knowing when to do what.
Right.
And how I'm thinking about why. And that's the difference between good and great. And so...
And that, by the way, is not just like you wake up and you get it. That's like a literal lifelong struggle of learning these kinds of lessons.
Yeah, it changes daily too. And I piece by piece, I add little bits of knowledge, and you know,
take stuff away too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm way better at it now than I was 5 years ago. But am I better today than I was yesterday? I don't know. But that's part of the creativity and part of the fraud thing too, which is you just never know, but you have to believe that your process, you have to believe in the process of it. Important lesson learned, just don't get caught in those thought processes, be willing. It's why I'm always an advocate of, I'm very much a let's try things that haven't been tried. Let's look to the future and not be scared of the downsides. Let's do the things. I like it if it's new.
Yeah.
I'm way more likely to, because I know what the old thing looks like, and you can usually go back fairly easily to what the old thing was. And it's pushing through to try the new things that's actually hard.
Yeah, I think fear is a big thing there. And I think fear is one of those very double-sided edges where it's like, one, fear can encourage you to do stuff. It can motivate the human body to do incredible feats of strength and endurance. At the same time, fear is like the number one thing that sets us back, because we're afraid to bridge out to the new things. We're afraid that when we do it, it's not going to be accepted, instead of doing the Josh Lee Kwai route, which is, why not just try it? Why not see what happens before passing judgment on something?
How about you? Any big lessons that you can think of?
Yeah. So the first one goes back to what you said. There are a lot of things in the world that you can't change, and that as hard as you try, you won't be able to change them. I've learned this through being in relationships with people, that sometimes you just can't change someone else, and that's how it works.
Most of the time.
Most of the time, right. But if there's one thing that you do have power and you do have control over, it is right here. And obviously this varies from person to person. A lot of people, are born with sometimes like a mental illness that doesn't let them accomplish the same sort of thing. They'll get trapped in the depressive state or whatever. And I think the brilliant part about being a human alive today is like, people used to die when they're like 17 of a random disease, right? People are living to 90, 100 years old these days because of science and modern technology and medicine as well. I think one of the big things I've learned is that shame is something that happens way too often. I think we get ashamed of a lot of different things. And my depression runs in my family. There's a lot of mental illness, and there's a lot of also sort of just body stuff that I would genetically inherit. And there's a lot of shame for a lot of people I've talked to and a lot of people I've heard from that like, hey, I have this thing. I need to take this medication for it. I feel ashamed of it. And it's like, no, 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 no. you are making yourself better when you're trying to fix yourself, when you're trying to actively work on yourself. And modern medicine, and my dad's a doctor, he advocates for this all the time. You are becoming a better person as a result. And if you're striving towards that, and if you're working towards making this function the best that it can, I think you're going to have a better time in life. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. We all have issues. We all have things we have to work through on different levels. And that's something that is a shared part of humanity. And I think being able to say, like, I'm not ashamed of this. I'm proud of myself and who I am and what I can accomplish. And I'm going to use these things to help me with it. I think that's a really important thing to sort of embody just in life.
Yeah, that's great. Perfect. I got one more thing to say, which is I forgot to mention earlier as far as lessons learned, advice to people that want to be creative and in the creative field. It's along the Miles Davis line thing, but this idea that being successful in the creative field is really about hard work. We've talked about this. I had a great anecdote that I always tell people, which is that people think that it's hard to be creative in the way that it's hard to like paint the Sistine Chapel, but it's actually hard, like coal mining hard. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like William Goldman quote for those people that know who that is. And I always say that making it in the movie business, and you can apply this to anything creative, it's like digging a hole a mile deep. Listen, anybody can do that. All you need is a shovel. It doesn't require any skill that you don't have. You just have to get in the hole every day and dig. And the thing that you find after you're in that hole and you're 3/4 of a mile deep is that you better just love playing in the dirt.
Because you're pretty deep down at that point. You're just surrounded by
dirt. You won't get in the hole every day and dig if you don't.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another small thing I wanted to say is one of my first improv coaches and a very influential guy in my life, he had a saying, which was think outside the pumpkin. Which I thought was really cute because The idea of like, you know, we've been dropping quotes the entire episode, but a big part of dropping a quote is also knowing that the quote doesn't define everything. And thinking outside the pumpkin is kind of like, it's like a meta statement on think outside the box, which is like, why does it have to be a box? Could be a pumpkin.
As soon as you say think outside the box, you're in the box.
You're in the box, man. Yeah, think outside the pumpkin.
That's a great
and
think
like,
outside the pumpkin.
Even think outside the pumpkin becomes like, well, now you're inside the pumpkin. Are you inside the pumpkin or are you outside the pumpkin? Why is it got to be a pumpkin? So like, I like the idea is that you're constantly challenging yourself to take the quotes that you know as well and reimagine them. You know, never let something become dull and stagnant in your life, I think, especially if you're going to be a creative person.
All right. So what's your advice to someone out there listening that's like wants to get started in the creative field, maybe not as a career, could just be as a hobby, you know, or just maybe just wants to be more creative in general? You know, or is already starting, but they just want to know maybe what are some steps to success? Like, what's your advice to somebody?
Number one, really examine why you want to do the thing that you say you want to do, because that is going to really be the thing that is going to sustain whatever you're doing over the long run. If it's like, hey, I want to be a pro League of Legends player because it's cool, because I think it's a really glamorous lifestyle and I want to be on the big stage in front of people and making people scream when I make a big play, as opposed to I want to be a pro League of Legends player because I'm good at this game and I want to challenge myself to be the best in the world and I think I can be, right? One person's in it for the glamour, one person's in it for the personal growth. I mean, they're both legitimate things to think. I'm just saying, make sure you're analyzing why you want to do something before you want to do it, if you want to jump into a creative thing. Because I think there are a lot of times that we say to ourselves, and I've met a lot of actors like this too, which is like, I want to be famous. That's all you want to be? Then you can go and murder someone and be famous, right? Like, you You don't need to be an actor to be quote-unquote famous. So I think if you have a more vapid sort of surface level want for something, you should really examine it and really ask yourself the tough questions, which is, why do I really want to do this thing? And if I really, really want to do it, what part of this like is the meaningful part to me as a person? And then if you go do that thing, I would suggest, if you have the liberty and freedom of choice, to choose something that you're more familiar with, something that you think is more innate to you, because it will help you get past those really first few rocky steps. So for instance, I made movies when I was a kid and I was always performing. Thus, performance came naturally to me. I wouldn't jump in and try and be an artist tomorrow if I wasn't super, super passionate about drawing and painting. Otherwise, it's just going to be really hard for you to, I think, get those first crucial steps out of the way, which can sometimes be the hardest and roughest to go through, because if you don't really believe the thing you're doing, it's going to be really hard to convince yourself to wake up and play in the dirt every day.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's playing in the dirt. You got to like, whatever you choose to do, you got to like playing in the dirt, because it's not going to be the glamorous part for most of it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that's a really good one. To me, I always say, you know, have your perspective. Figure out what it is that you, that's special about what you're bringing to the table. And I think it's along similar lines. Just, you know, if you're going to be a pro League of Legends player, why? What is it you've got? You know, are you going to jungle better than anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be the best top laner they've ever seen? Are you going to take some character that everybody thinks is bad, but you think is good?
Or maybe you're not even a great player, but you're a great team leader.
There you go. Right. You got a some strategies or ways you think about the game that are different than everybody else. That's the way that you're really going to make your mark, and you're going to find that creative satisfaction, is to have that thing that's the pillar of what you is really, you know, you and your personality and what you're passionate about. And yeah, passion is something you circle around and I'm circling around too. The really big component. It's, you know, love it. Have passion for it. Creativity is really about passion. It's, and creativity is not very often about sort of small emotions. It's very often about big emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's the sort of what gets you out of bed every day. What wakes you up and makes you go, I can't wait to do this, or I can't wait to make some progress on this, or I'm so frustrated I didn't make any progress on this. I need to make some progress on this because it's not fulfilling that part of me, that the thirsty hungering for filling, you know, doing that thing.
It actually leads into the last question that we've got written down, which is, people have ideas all the time. What do you think stops most of those ideas from coming to fruition? Like what, because we hear it from emails, but you just hear it from your friends and things all the time. They have ideas. They have things that they want to accomplish or they think they could accomplish.
Yeah.
Why don't those things happen?
Like we said before, I think fear is a big thing. Also, just sometimes sitting down and doing something is the most intimidating thing in the world, where it's like, I'm here, I've got the canvas, I'm ready to paint the picture I want to paint. Writer's block, artist block. I can't actually put the pencil on the paper because I'm just too, I just can't get over this hurdle. I think we create our own hurdles every single day. Society creates some of them as well. The media paints a lot of hurdles. Movies paint hurdles for us. We start to believe things that people tell us, and that ends up, I think, screwing people over in the long run, because all of a sudden when you approach something, instead of being like, what are the things I can do? It's what are the things I can't do and why can't I do it? And a lot of the times the things are really nonsensical. Like, I don't know how many times I've talked to someone, they're like, I really want to do this, but I can't. And I just go like, but why can't you? And sometimes they can't come up with a real answer. And it's, we put a lot of things in front of ourselves because we don't want to set ourselves up for failure in life. And honestly, I would say every major artist has had 90% failure, 10% success in terms of, like,
they're doing really well if they're at that rate.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, failing is a huge part of moving forward. And like when you were a baby, when you first learned to walk, did you just stand up and do it? Heck nah. You fell over a bunch of times. Same with your bicycle. Same with every sort of thing you do in life. You got to mess up. You got to play in the dirt.
Yeah, you know, it's such a good point. And I think fear of failure holds people back so much. And we told our stories in the total wrong way at the start of the episode, right?
Right.
Because that's
like,
what you hear.
Here's all we do.
Here's the successful part of it. But man, I made coffee and I ran tapes for months, you know? And I went and I stayed late at night and I cut my own little trailers for things. And people, you know, the first couple, they were like, you know? And I was like, okay, well, what about it? How can I fix that? Come back the next time. Okay, that's a little better, blah, blah, blah. And yeah.
Well, a lot of people would have, the first time they went, would have been like, nah, that's it, I can't do it.
Yeah, quit. This is not for me, I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to get you super far. And I think perseverance and not fearing failure is a huge component of success in any business, definitely the creative business. Again, because nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. They're giving you their opinion of what they think it's good or not. You don't even have to listen to them. Look at like somebody like Steve Jobs, who refused to listen to anybody and did his thing. And that guy, as far as I know, did pretty well, changed the world. So I really love that. The other thing I will say is that be practical, not in the way of set your dream way out there. Not that's not what I mean by be practical. Be practical in how you can accomplish it. So
yeah.
if you're going to paint a painting, set out the step. If you're going to write a book, I think this one's a little bit easier to explain. A lot of people, you hear this all the time, right? I have this idea for a story. I want to write a book someday. Okay, that's great. You're with half of the population now. You know what'll cut that down to 5% of the population that are with you? You say, yeah, and I set myself a deadline that I'm going to write the first chapter by the end of next week. or I'm going to write the first chapter by the end of this month.
You're going down to 1% at this point, I'd say.
Yep.
Not even 5.
Yep. And you actually go, okay, that's the big view. I want to write a book. Now, let's zoom in. What are the steps I need to start accomplishing that goal?
Mm-hmm.
And you can set it reasonably. It's just like working out or something, right? I want to lose 50 pounds. You don't look and go, well, how can I do that in one day? You go, how do I start doing that? Well, I go to the gym tomorrow and I only go for 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know? And eventually I'm going to work that up and I'm going to have lost 50 pounds after X amount of days.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with creative endeavors. It feels like you want that bolt of lightning, that magical moment. That's not really how it works. It really works in setting yourself the deadline and saying, you know what? I'm going to write the first chapter by the end of next week.
Right. You're going to have, and I think a lot of people have this like jealousy or envy and think that because someone else has the spark, that they're never going to be able to do something similar or on that level. And like, sure, there's going to be a Mozart born once every 1,000 years, but that doesn't mean that the other 99.9% of people that are doing amazing things in that field all were born that way. The hours had to be put in for it to happen. And honestly, like, take a look at your life. I think this happens to everyone where we are told no all the time. And you need to see how often that no affects how you make your next decision. Like when you're a little kid and you're like, I want to paint a zebra. And they're like, well, but today you cannot paint a zebra because no, you know, and you're like, oh, well, okay, I guess I'm not going to do that. I mean, even if that moment doesn't like, you don't think it affects you over the long run. Sometimes these things really burrow into your head and become parts of our personality and being like, I can't do that because of X, Y, and Z. I'm going to make the reasons up now because earlier in my life or something happened where someone said I couldn't do this for whatever reason. And I believe them to the point where it's never, I can never sort of like go over that hurdle. Don't let that happen.
You know, that reminds me of something that I am constantly telling myself all the time when I'm making movie trailers, when I'm cutting game nights. And I literally say this phrase in my head, which is there are no rules.
Uh-huh.
Because your brain will fight you so hard to say you can't do that. And I literally tell myself, no, there are no rules.
Yeah.
Like, I want this moment to work in this way. You can't do that. No, there are no rules. The only rule is when I look at it, do I think it's good?
Yeah.
That's the only rule. Because that's how you get to the great part of what Miles Davis said. You don't worry about rules.
Mm-hmm.
You worry about what am I accomplishing? Am I happy with it? Do I have creative satisfaction? Yeah. Somebody tells you you can't paint a zebra. It's painting. There are no rules.
Do whatever you want. Yeah. I mean, I think the reason that I love watching movies that surprise me are movies that break the mold. Like Cabin in the Woods is one of my favorite horror movies in a long time because it was like saying, hey, the horror movie world has a lot of rules. Let's make a movie where we break all of them and yep. show them. Let's be meta about it.
There are no rules.
Look
at Rob. He shoots Windex onto his painting. He just throws paint at it.
Talk about being creative right there.
Like, closes his eyes sometimes. There are no rules.
And of course, it took him a long, long time to really refine all these processes. And that's the only hard and fast rule for me, which is like, you want to get something, you better put the freaking work in. It's not easy, but hey, that's how it works, man.
I had a great, I had a teacher, mentor type boss at one point who had been an editor, but had moved past that part of their career and was overseeing a lot of editors at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that she told me that really I keep to this day was she said, listen, like you can't control when your great ideas are going to strike you. You hope that it's a lot and, you know, maybe more talented people, it'll happen more often, but it's a percentage thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a really talented person's going to have 30% of their ideas are great. And, you know, a normal person, maybe it's 15%, but that doesn't mean they don't have great ideas sometimes. You can't control when or not that happens. The only thing you can control, and this is for editing specifically, is just knowing the footage better than anybody else.
Right.
And allowing those great moments to start because you can't make connections between things that you don't know exist. And so what she was telling me was like, listen, don't worry so much in each given moment if you're going to come up with that brilliant thing. Worry more about doing the hard work, which is watching all the footage, cataloging it, making sure you know everything that's available to you and everything that you might be able to mix together.
Right.
And then that's going to give you just the greatest chance of coming up with those brilliant ideas. And I think that you can take that lesson and you can apply it to anything in that. Just be prepared so that when that brilliant idea can come, you can take advantage of it.
Yeah, Hindsight is 20/20 in acting auditions. You almost always walk out and being like, oh, I should have done it like that. Well, maybe you could have gotten there if you spent a little more time preparing on the front end, right? Like that is definitely, yeah, knowing the footage, knowing what you're working with, you know, putting the work in. Again, play in the dirt. It's not glamorous, and it's, you know, the glamour comes.
But that's great, because anybody can do it.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Like, the sparks of glamour are there, but that's not what I go for. I go for the thrill of learning something, the thrill of being in the grind, Clint talks about filmmaking as going to war with your friends every day. And by the end of it, you're making a movie. You're toughing the weather out. You're figuring out how to feed everyone. You're making sure everyone's comfortable and also challenging themselves at the same time. You know, it's a great way to look at it, I think.
Movie making is a battle, man.
Yeah.
Rob and I are still friends to this day because he was in battle with me on that movie. So.
All right, to the listeners, what do you do and how has your life helped inform your decisions? I don't want to make this thing like I do this cool thing. I don't care about that. I just want to know how you got to where you are. You know, if you're satisfied, if you want to push yourself forward, or if you like being in that current job and like you find different ways to have a creative output or to flex your muscles in a different way. You know, I want to know what's held you back, what's pushed you forward. Please tweet at us.
Yeah, and I just want to say too, like, we're all a work in progress. So tomorrow you can decide to write that, to set that deadline where you write that first chapter by the end of the month. Like, at any moment you can decide to do that.
Yeah.
And it's never too late.
Yeah.
I there's this great story. There's this great story I love about Julius Caesar. And at some point he's sitting and he's crying. He's bawling his eyes out. And I think somebody asks him, like, what's wrong? You know, he's Caesar. He's this is before he's the great Caesar. At this point, he's just like the governor of Spain or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm 33 years old. By this time, Alexander the Great had already conquered the whole entire known world.
Right.
I'm nothing. I'm nobody. I'll never be as great as that man. And Julius Caesar goes on to become one of the greatest men, arguably, in the history of the world.
It's not about the age of...
It's not about what other people have done.
It's not about what other people have done. It's about the age of the heart, age of the mind.
Okay, we hope you enjoyed this special remastered episode of our show. Hope you liked hearing Jimmy and my origin stories, where we come from, what our journey's been like. If you want to support all of our content, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone to order your magic cards, products, singles, anything at all. You know, Time Spiral remastered. There's still Kaldheim stuff. Strixhaven is right on the horizon. You're going to buy magic cards anyway. If you just use our affiliate link, when you do, you really are supporting Game Nights, Extra Turns, all of our content. Also, when you get that stuff, you really want to protect it. Ultra Pro products are the way to go. They really keep all of your game pieces in great condition, keep them protected, and also looking awesome on the battlefield. You want to use Pro Gloss Eclipse sleeves. You want to use Satin Tower deck boxes. You want to play stuff on a nice playmat. Ultra Pro also has sweet dice, relic tokens. They give wall scrolls like you can see behind me here. If you want to make your game room look sweet, Ultra Pro can help you out with that too. Remember, by supporting our sponsors, you really are supporting all of our content. Jimmy, obviously, he's not getting married every weekend, so he's going to be back next weekend where we're going to continue with our normal Magic and Commander strategy content. And I also want to say that the Time Spiral Remastered episode of Game Nights is coming out very, very soon when you're watching this. So I'll spoil something here for you too. Cassius Marsh, everybody's favorite guest, he's back on this episode of Game Nights upcoming. So if you want to see... You know, you always know when Cassius shows up on the show, it's going to be an explosive game. If you want to see which way that goes, make sure to tune into our content. Hit that subscribe button so you know right when the Game Nights episode comes out. All right, big shout outs to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, and Sam Waldo. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that begin and end all of our shows. And, yeah, he also did this window behind us. So you can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. Peace. Almost forgot. It's weird because I'm by myself.
Thank you for your attention.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.